You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Hotel Mars episode N with David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. And we are discussing the surface of Mars, the planet Mars, the history of Mars, with a planetary geologist, a man who's helping us understand events that happened 3.4 billion years ago, and that accidentally on purpose, fate being what it is, Viking 1, the first NASA probed on the surface of Mars of great extent from 1976, landed in a place that allowed the professor and his colleagues to reason backwards to events in the late Hesperian period of Mars, which is a period that is known for lots of volcanoes, lots of volcanic activity. But in this instance, it's about an ocean on the northern hemisphere that the professor tells us had an ice sheet on top of it, and there's a crater in it. So, David, I turn to you for a question for the professor.
Professor, I'm a little bit confused. Did the enormous flood channel, was that created by the impact, or was that there first, or what? How did it end up being a flood?
Okay, that's actually a really good question, and I'm really happy that you asked it. Okay, so the flat channels of Crissy Planitia, okay, they are called outflow channels, you know, in the Martian literature. There is a reason why they are called outflow channels, like, because they are, they actually came from aquifers. They, I mean, the flats that produced them came from chaotic terrains, you know, that we think are collapsed aquifers. Now, the sequence of events would have been the following. So you have massive, very ancient aquifers, right, around the, like, the Crissy Planitia Highlands, okay? The aquifers become unstable during the late Hesperian. They collapse and they release huge amounts of water. The water, the flats, carve the outflow channels that extend into the northern plains, okay, and form the ocean. Then later, Paul strikes and superposes, you know, it's actually, it disrupts the fluvial landscapes, okay, generated by these outflow channels. So the sequence would have been, you know, the ocean generating flats first, and then the crater forms on top of these channels.
The detail here I need to understand is, when did the ocean freeze? When did the surface of the ocean turn into ice? It was before the asteroid struck. Is that correct? And the asteroid would have generated an enormous amount of energy and momentarily melted that frozen landscape. And did that turn in, did that feed the mega tsunami that swept as far as 900 kilometers later where Viking landed?
Yeah, the initial condition of the ocean, or like the condition at the time of impact, is unknown, right? So there are some models, some climate models, that suggest that Mars could have been much warmer than, you know, was previously considered. So it might have had an ice sheet, maybe like almost certainly seasonal ice sheet, but not necessarily permanent. Okay, so this is like, I'm just talking about like existing models. Other models think that the ocean would have frozen rapidly. Now, my opinion, based on the work that we did with this, you know, mega tsunami study, is that at the time of impact, Paul's impact, the climate was relatively warm and wet. The reason why I think this is, I mean, there is a very important observation here that supports this relatively warm interpretation, right? So the, as I was mentioning before, okay, we think we have two mega tsunami events, okay? An older one that sourced from a shoreline at minus 3,800 meters, okay? Now, the ocean, we have evidence that the ocean recedes to minus 4,100 meters. And then this second, the younger mega tsunami event happens, okay? The time in between, okay, the time in between these two mega tsunami events could have been significant, okay? And there is evidence that the climate changed and it became much colder, right? After the, you know, like during the recession, during the ocean's regression. So you might ask, so what is the evidence? Okay, so this, the older mega tsunami, the initial one, shows evidence of basically the wave washing ashore and then washing back into the ocean, leaving behind backwash channels, okay? Backwash channels are basically the water reaches like the far front of the wave, like it reaches the further distance inland, and then gravity pulls it back down into the ocean. And as it goes back into the ocean, it erodes the surface. The younger mega tsunami, on the other hand, deposit, consists of these lobate materials with no evidence of backwash. So the interpretation here is that the wave actually froze during the run-up because the climate was much colder. Okay, so like to answer your question, what did the ocean become like, you know, exposed to a much colder and cryogenic environment? Okay, you're developing a thick ice sheet on top. Like when I'm thinking of an ice sheet, as you mentioned, I'm thinking about like something thick, like maybe like, you know, greater than 100 meters, let's say, right? So this would have been after the ocean regression into this lower minus 4,100 meter shoreline.
I understand. David?
When Viking was sent to land here, how much of what your research is talking about in your paper was known, or is this just fortuitous that it landed there and you were able to do this additional research?
I think that very little, or I mean, there was no knowledge of an ocean or like a high probability of an ocean on Mars back then. That idea came out like in the 1980s. And the whole concept of mega tsunamis was not even considered at the time. But, you know, something that, yeah, so basically, essentially, like, you know, to answer your question, I was going to get like sidetracked here, but to answer your question, yeah, we didn't have any information on this. So this is the result of accumulating knowledge over decades and like using better resolution data sets.
We have a fun story that we play when we are speaking to major league researchers such as yourself, Professor, which is to give you an unlimited budget and tell you what is it that you want to know that would confirm your hypothesis about these events and tell you more about the fate of liquid water on the surface of Mars. Where would you look first? What do you do with your unlimited budget?
Okay, can I give you like some extra science background on this?
Of course.
To answer this question?
Please do.
Okay, so like something that we found in this paper that is also like, I think, super exciting is like there's, when we examine the older mega tsunami deposit, it has no evidence of like possible mud volcanoes on top of it. Okay. Now, the younger mega tsunami deposit has a lot of like superposed possible mud volcanoes. Okay. And as I mentioned, well, I was saying this before, that the other temporal constraint that we see for Paul is that it is actually beneath, it's covered, it's embayed by the younger mega tsunami deposit. So basically, it's above the channel floors that formed, that carried the water into the northern plains to form the ocean, but beneath the second mega tsunami deposit, implying that it formed while the ocean still existed in liquid form. you know? So that's an important time constraint there that I wanted to emphasize. And there is no other creator that I know that has these, you know, like extremely precise, you know, temporal constraints, you know? So for all the other candidate creators that I know of. Now, the unlimited budget part, I was saying that the Younger Mega Tsunami deposit has a lot of Mad Volcanoes superposed. The other place where we found a lot of like Mad Volcanoes that are superposed is the Vastitas Borealis Formation, the frozen ocean's residue that we talked about before, okay? So you have Mad Volcanoes on the frozen ocean. You have Mad Volcanoes on the Younger Mega Tsunami. There is a connection there. There's a very likely connection, and is that the Mad Volcanism was induced by retained seawater, and that this seawater, because it, you know, like the Younger Mega Tsunami deposit happened after the ocean receded into this lower level, right? So the ocean was, you know, possibly present at the surface, I think, for maybe a few million years, you know. So, but that's still, it needs to be determined, right? So with the unlimited budget, I would go to Paul Crater, and I would go and sample the Mad Volcano Mega Tsunami deposits. Sorry, like the Mad Volcanoes on top of the Younger Mega Tsunami deposit that are extruding these seawater and sediments to understand the basically the chemistry of the ocean and its possible habitability, you know, and like how this habitability evolved. And when I say habitability, there is another concept here that I think is exciting. When we are looking for places on Mars to look for life, okay? So maybe you find a basin with evidence of water and you say, well, maybe, you know, because on Earth, like the hydrosphere and the biosphere are always intertwined. So the presence of water might actually indicate the presence of life. That's not actually true. Like you need continued habitability over hundreds of millions of years. So basically that environment with liquid water, you know, should have retained habitable conditions all the way back to the time when life started. You know, you could have like maybe like some interruptions and maybe life could become latent or dormant, but like in scales of hundreds of millions of years, I think you need sustained habitability, you know, and both Paul, you know, the Mad Volcanoes on Paul and the Viking 1 landing site give you that, because remember what we were talking about before, those materials, you know, came from an ocean. The ocean came from aquifers, you know, it's a groundwater fed ocean. The ocean came from aquifers, or that's what we think now. And the aquifers formed very early in the history of Mars, when Mars could have been Earth-like. So you have this continued habitability.
Just a moment.
And that's what I would do with the budget.
Yes, I know. Just a moment. We have just a moment. We'll be back with a question from David Livingston, Dr. Space. This is Alexis Rodriguez, who with his colleagues Daryl Robertson, Jeffrey Cargill, Victor Baker, Daniel Berman, Jacob Cohen, Francois Costar, Goro Komatsu, Anthony Lopez, Hideaki Miyamoto, and Mario Zarroca have published evidence of an oceanic impact in megatsunami sedimentation in Crisia Polynesia on Mars. That's the northern hemisphere. But you see, we started with an asteroid impact and the happy accident of Viking 1 landing in the zone that tells a story about this event when the asteroid struck. And now we're helping the professor with an unlimited budget to go exploring in that pole crater for evidence of habitability. When we come back, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock, LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.